Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am always your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me as always, although that's a complete lie, Filippo D'Onofrio, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, so Patrick's still not going to be joining us again. He's still out there apartment hunting.
I think he's got a pretty good lead. Let's cross our fingers for him.
Yeah.
If all goes well, should be good this week.
Yeah. But, it's starting to feel like summer down here, or at least late spring. Surprisingly enough, spring was kind of short this year.
Yeah, it's just like winter, 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 a little bit of spring, and now we're skipping straight to summer.
Yeah.
We had snow 2 weeks ago, and it was like mid-80s and just disgusting hot and humid here. Yeah. Okay.
It got up to around 90 yesterday, so.
Oof.
Yeah, this week we're going to be discussing some, more political shenanigans, and surprisingly enough, only one or two of them actually involve Donald Trump. mostly we got this really just probably mentally unstable Senate candidate from West Virginia that's trying to take on Mitch McConnell. Then, of course, there's the White House Correspondents' Dinner in which Michelle Wolf basically went up to the podium and did some serious truth-telling.
Yeah.
That's a nice way of saying that she basically bent over the establishment and then tore it a new beehole from gut to gullet. it was the greatest thing ever. Mm. It was very comparable to what happened with Colbert back when W was still president.
Yeah.
We'll see. Also, Donald Trump made the bad decision to make Rudy Giuliani his new lawyer.
What?
Or the good decision for the rest of us, perhaps.
Yeah. So. Apparently there are still a couple blockbusters left over in the U.S. One of them just got more famous. You'll find out why. Australia is coming up and signing. They kind of want to keep the Great Barrier Reef going around for a little while, so they're coughing up the cash. And bus drivers in Japan are striking in just the single most Japanese way possible. You'll find out what I mean later on. Yeah. But all that and more on this most litigious week of Let's Weekend. So, to begin us, to get us all started, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, this week I've actually been enjoying the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Haven't gotten through as many of the movies as I would have liked, but I did watch the first Avengers movie.
Uh-huh.
Which was good. Yeah, it was a little slow. That opening third of the movie was a little bit slow, but it kind of picked up. Yeah, it picked up pretty well after that. It's good. I like the storyline. It got everything established. It kind of set up Iron Man 3 pretty well, so I'll have to end up watching that afterwards. Then I watched Black Panther, which was okay, I guess.
It's one of those things where you kind of had to have been there in the theater when it first came out.
Maybe, but, it's like I watched it and it was like, okay, the cinematography is great, the acting is good, there's a lot of good action in there, and I can't relate to any of the characters, and it's a good Marvel movie. It's not one of those that I will watch many times. It tries to do a little bit of social commentary and does so in a way that I've kind of felt was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, so, heavy-handed, and honestly, I'm going to be completely honest here. As good as a movie as it was kind of an apology for neoliberalism.
Eh. Yeah.
Like, it's honestly, I think Killmonger had a better case going for him. But yeah. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, he was... yeah. It's like, I kind of understand where he was coming from, because that's the thing. I can't really relate to any of the characters, but I can kind of understand all of their viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, yeah, well, just because I can understand where this is all going, it doesn't mean this is a particularly interesting story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just kind of one of those movies where I understand that it has to be there. I understand that this is a story that it has to tell. The female warriors in this movie were amazing.
And hot.
And, well, there was that, yeah. Well, but, yeah, they were hot and attractive without being overly sexified, which was a very great thing for them to have done. So, you know, it was good. So, if you get a chance to watch it, watch it. But, you know, don't expect it to be, like, the greatest thing ever. Because, it's...
I mean, there is a reason... Part of the reason it was such a big hit is because, you know, it was predominantly a non-white cast. And that was, you know, that was part of its, not just its appeal, but also its virtue.
Yeah.
You know, it basically showed that you could do a major, big-budget superhero movie and not have to resort to whitewashing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it worked, because it fucking broke pretty much every record possible.
Yeah. So, yeah, I liked it. It was all right. So there.
For the record, for anybody who's interested, the storyline that they did for this Black Panther movie is pretty much based on the early 2000s writing that Christopher Priest did on Black Panther. So if you want like a better, I guess, better written approach, just go back and read his work on it. They've started collecting all of his work that he did for Black Panther in trade paperback form. Also, Christopher Priest himself is a pretty fascinating individual in general. Just, he's a man of many talents. You'll see what I mean. But
yeah, I may investigate that further.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Also, I started and finished Scourged by Kevin Hearn. This is the last book in the Iron Druid Chronicles.
Yep.
This little thing called Ragnarok is happening. So
yeah,
that's a thing. There are Yetis that like playing hockey in this book.
I don't know why, but somehow that makes all the sense in the world.
it does. Yeah, there's a lot of good action in this one. Yeah, a lot of crossover of mythologies, as Kevin Hearn is wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
Good way to wrap up the series. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and he did leave it very much open for another series if he so wishes to go back to it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a very good book. If you haven't actually tried the Iron Druid Chronicles, this is one of those series that's, I guess you could classify it as urban fantasy, because it's...
Mm-hmm.
Modern day, but good stuff. You'll you will laugh and you will cry and you will wonder what the is going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great series. And I also started this week Death's End, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Brandon. It's the third book of the Three Body series.
Yep.
And holy crap, is this book ever dense.
Not only is it dense, it is fucking weird.
Yeah, I'm already at the point where I'm like, okay, my brain is struggling to comprehend what I am hearing here. there is a lot going on, and the way that he does it is kind of hard to follow, because not only does it jump around a lot, it jumps around centuries.
Yep.
So
because one of the big things in that book is that there's this massive time abyss between, you know, people on Earth and the, you know, the aliens. Yeah. So, yeah, it's sort of like them having to work between, you know, dealing with stuff. Stuff's going to take a while, and, you know, the way time works in space, it's
like,
mind-bending shit.
Yeah.
It's kind of difficult to comprehend at first.
Yeah, they start off with one project, and that gets underway, and they move on to something else, and then they go back to the original one, and yeah. It's a little difficult to follow, but I'm enjoying it so far. I like Xi Jinlu's writing, although it's, I guess I could say this is Ken Liu's translation, so yeah.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. So, and we'll see next week if I finished it. It might take me a little longer than I would expect because I have actually had to go back and re-listen to parts to make sure that I actually understood what I thought I did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of pretty much it for me this week.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
I started Schitt's Creek. I watched the first episode. I will definitely be watching more of that. That is on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's a Netflix original. I wasn't paying attention, but it's something that a friend of ours has enjoyed for a while. So we thought we'd check it out. And we definitely see the appeal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about a very wealthy family who loses everything. And the dad had bought a town in some rural outpost somewhere in America as a joke for his son. And they have to move there because that's the only asset they have. So, yeah, that's always fun. Gretzko, I am still watching that, although slowly because it was... You know, for anybody, pretty much anybody over the age of 18, it hits home a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little too real at times.
It totally is. And then I also started North and South. That's an old BBC, well, not that old, but it's an old BBC series. So I figured after the events of today, I was ready to sit down and start another one of my famous English dramas. So,
yeah.
You guys know I get into that stuff.
So I'm going to ask, because I think I might be familiar with this one. What's the basic plot of this?
The basic plot is that the dad is a clergyman and he doesn't like something that happened. So he gave up his... he gave up his parish and moved from, you know, the south of England to the north of England to an industrial town where the big thing is cotton mills. And so it's very much a clash of English culture. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there was a North and South miniseries that was out in the U.S., I believe it was.
Yeah, except that one was about the Civil War.
Yeah, that was a Civil War. So, but, you know, there's a lot of parallels there. So they're trying to bridge the gap of their understanding of the different customs and whatnot. So, yeah, it looks okay so far. Recognize a couple of faces in there, which... I mean, when you live on a little ass island, pretty much you're going to recycle the same actors all the time. So, still working on Sword of Mana. Didn't get too much time to play this week, but I'm thinking I'm going to have a lot more time to play it because I did have a very short stint in employment. I did quit, and today was my last day. So... yeah, I think I made it, what, 3.5 weeks?
Yeah.
But, you know, when something isn't for you, something isn't for you.
Did you at least leave on somewhat okay terms?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't believe in burning bridges unless that bridge deserves to be burned. And in this case, it didn't. You know, a lot of them were confused. They were like, well, you seem to be doing so well. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll wear a nice little mask and smile all the time, but... I was not doing too well with that.
What were you doing again?
I was doing basically a teacher aide job.
Right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That had to be. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You have my condolences.
Ah, thank you. They have my respect because that is a hard ass job.
Yeah.
I mean, I already knew that public education was a very underappreciated job, but, yeah, these guys, They're freaking warriors. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. And what grade were you?
Second.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about a lot of second grade. The corny jokes, the stories that go on forever and ever. But yeah, they're super sweet, you know, that's, but my passion is computers. It is.
Were they a bit more well behaved than you expected them to be, or?
Nah, they were just kids. they actually did a lot more academically than I expected them to.
So they were a lot more intelligent than you expected them to be.
No, they were being pushed a lot more than I thought. Yeah. So they, you know, they're writing their own stories. They're having.
Oh yeah, I did that too.
No. Like based on the big long text that they've been reading and compare and contrast, and they're doing things that, you know, like we did in seventh grade. Mm. They're like mini. I don't know. They're really pushing hard. Mm-hmm. They're already doing fractions in second grade too. And I'm like, what?
Oh God.
Really? Second grade?
That was, I mean, I will admit they kind of lightly touched on that towards the end when I was in second grade, mm-hmm. but.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something. And,
let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even though it's second grade and even though they were kids, were you able to notice a difference between your second grade experience and theirs,
besides yeah.
the obvious fractions part?
Yeah, I did. It's just, you know, when we were in second grade, we got away with a lot of shit in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It was like the last, I don't know, it was like I was the last generation of free children. Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, second grade, I got on my bike and I rode my ass to school. And now there's like, you have to be marked on the bus and marked off the bus. And there's constantly somebody counting heads and tallying up kids and locking doors with alarms. So, you know, they can't just walk out or anything. Whereas when I was a kid, you were expected to simply not walk out.
Yeah.
You know, and you were expected to simply walk home after school, or, you know, if you were going to a friend's house, be home by sunset. It's, really, there is a big difference between the way that kids are now and the way that kids were. And yeah. everything that they have after school is all very scheduled. And, you know, it's all ball games where adults are running the show, or classes where adults are running the show and all this. And, you know, kids don't just go and climb a tree. And if they tried to climb a tree, I'd have to yell at them and tell them not to.
Yeah.
So,
did they even have, like, a proper playground or anything?
Oh, God, yeah. They played four square. They had that thing that you toss the basketball into, and it shoots it out one of four whatever shoots. Yeah. Swings. They still have the little dome thing with the triangles. Looks like a geodesic dome that you climb up in. Yeah, and kids still fall off of it.
Yeah. So, did they have, like, wood chips or?
Yeah, it is wood chips.
Yeah, that's what they did when I was in school, too.
Yeah, and see, we didn't have that shit. We just had mud.
And concrete, which
is. Yeah. But, there's no big, tall metal slide anymore. So it's probably my brother's fault, because he broke two girls' arms in the same week, and they both had the same name, too. So maybe my generation ruined it for everybody else with all the weird shit we got into.
Yeah.
But they still get to play jump rope, and they still try to, you know, put it up and nearly clothesline each other, but they don't know they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Some of these kids are playing Call of Duty and they're like 7 and 8, and my head is reeling.
Do you mean like on, like, actually, do you mean like on the playground?
No.
Oh, like in, like
they're actually. On the Xbox.
Oh, okay, yeah. Fuck their parents.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? They asked me on my opinions of games, and I told them. I said, I have a fifth grader, and I don't let him play Call of Duty. Well, what about blah, blah, blah? No. Well, what about Fortnite Battle Royale? No, he can play regular Fortnite only because he's 10. hint, hint, I don't think you should be playing it because you're 7 and 8. But, you know, yeah. So there's still people not paying attention to what their kids are doing with video games.
Right.
And we all have to deal with the fallout of that. And mm-hmm. we're the ones who are going to get bad-mouthed about it. And you know what? We know what the hell we're doing. We're not going to buy our little cousins fucking Fortnite or mm-hmm. whatever. We're not going to let our kids watch that shit or play that shit. So,
yeah, apparently Fortnite is like the scourge of high schools.
Oh, God. Because
they can play the phone version between classes and all that shit.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this. Did any of those kids have smartphones?
No, that is more 4th and 5th grade.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't see a single one of the 2nd graders with a smartphone. And again, I live in a fairly rich community.
Yeah.
You know, we live in the, basically the slums of it, I suppose. We live in the cheapest place we could possibly afford here. And it ain't that cheap.
They can play as much as they want at home.
Yeah.
As soon as they get home, they probably take their parents.
Yeah, they do. They do. I have seen that. You know, they get in the car and the parents just hand the phone over. But the 4th and 5th graders, man, they're busting out iPhones, like iPhones that are more expensive than what I carry.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there watching one of them texting as soon as she got out into the bus line, and I'm like, seriously, you've got a rose pink iPhone in a clear case? I know adults who can't even afford that.
Yeah.
But then again, my little spawn has a phone, not an iPhone, though.
Yeah.
So I'm just as guilty.
Yeah.
So it definitely, you know, it definitely was an interesting experience. And I picked up a whole lot of stuff and did a whole lot of self-discovery as well.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point in my life, I am happily unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to leave it there. And looking forward to summer. Got a few more weeks to get my kid through school. And then all of the schedules go right out the window and we can do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, it was.
Yeah, because I specifically remember, like, when I was in grade school, the last week of school before summer vacation, we didn't do shit.
Yeah, they clean out the desks, have field day. It's the same. That's the same.
Yeah.
They got through with all of the standardized testing today.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the rest of the school year,
But see, you got to remember, when I was in grade school, standardized testing wasn't a thing.
It wasn't. Mm-mm. No, we didn't do that.
Probably not to the degree that it is now.
No, like every few years, like we would do the PSAT. And
yeah, like I did the PSAT when I was in 4th, and
yeah.
like that was it.
Yeah,
I didn't take another standardized test until I was in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Yeah, but
and a lot of fucking good it's doing, isn't it?
I felt bad about the standardized test thing. Some of the shit was really hard. I saw questions with parentheses, adding and multiplying exponents.
Yeah.
2nd grade,
yeah.
You guys.
And people, and remember, folks, and I want, because some of you folks who are listening who aren't in the U.S., we need to explain this. Depending on how those test scores go, that it determines how much funding they get for the next year.
I know. And one of the teachers I talked to was just so heartbroken that the reading scores were low.
Uh-huh.
And they had tried so hard. And it's not for lack of having bright kids. I mean, this is going to sound super conceited, but my kid is smart as fuck.
Yeah.
Seriously, he's very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And he can read. He's got the vocabulary of a 19-and-a-half-year-old when they tested him a year ago.
Uh-huh.
He can read like no other. And he didn't get a great score on it. And I'm like, seriously? Because he's probably one of the smartest kids in the school.
Oh, was this, was it like English or?
It was the reading part of the math.
Reading
test.
Comprehension?
It's that, and then a little bit more, too. But
was there also, like, sentence diagramming or something
like
that?
The 2nd graders do Venn diagrams, too.
Yeah. I've never been good at those.
But most of the tests seem to focus on poetry, And of course they covered some of it, but you know, they're not going through iambic tetrameters and all of those
contaminants
and whatever. But the kids were just like, you can just see it on their faces. And that one teacher was just, I mean, it was like somebody had ripped her heart out and stomped it, because all of her kids, you know, got grades that were lower than she had expected.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say so badly, but it's just a number. But I can't say that because
no, it's you can't. An
important number.
Because that's how the shit runs here in the U.S., unfortunately.
Which is...
Gotta give all that billions and billions of dollars to the military-industrial complex, but you can't shed $10 million for a fucking kindergartner.
Exactly. Why is my kid out there riding a bike? What the hell goes on my podcast? I just looked out the window and there goes my kid way over in the field.
I don't know.
Hey, you know what? That's what they're supposed to do.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I mean, it's a Friday. What the fuck?
You know. It is. But, you know, I did feel bad that she was just so down in the mouth about that.
Yeah.
And that's not...
And before we go any further, I just need to say this. Whatever you do, don't let people fool you into that charter school bullshit.
No.
Because all that does is favor the wealthy kids.
Yep.
It doesn't help the regular, you know, American kids. It just
doesn't help 80% of the kids out there.
No.
Probably more.
Depending on the states, the standards can be really low.
Oh, yeah.
And charter
schools.
John
Oliver did a good segment about those things, and some of the worst ones would just say, oh, we have all our kids here, even if they have, like, 25% attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And inflate things, as well as, you know, schools just shut down. And it's like, well, what the fuck do you do with your kid now?
Yeah.
And when charter schools go in rural areas, it drives out the public schools.
Yep.
And then you have a public school that is housing all the kids from an hour and a half driving radius.
Mm-hmm.
And that ain't cool.
Nope.
You know, people need to have the things that we've put in place for our society to run. We need to have our public schools.
Yeah.
Otherwise, parents can't go to work. You know, parents don't go to work. Families starve. This is reality. So... Yeah. So anyway, sorry. I really went off on a tangent.
No. It's a yes, it was a tangent, but it was one that was completely worth having.
Yeah.
Because our education system sucks in this country, and you know, some of the solutions are so obvious, but fucking nobody wants to, at least nobody in power wants to actually do anything about it.
Right, which is a shame. DeVos, oh God, I can't even imagine how much work it's going to take to undo this shit.
Well, some of this shit's been happening since before George Bush, so...
Yes, this is true.
You know, I mean, this didn't start with Trump's. This shit goes back over 20 years, so...
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, so Chris, what about you?
Well, so I've been enjoying the NBA playoffs, where my Cleveland Cavaliers have been kicking the shit out of the Toronto Raptors, the number one seed, which one of the guys on ESPN, when they were going to commercial break at the end of the third quarter, said, we'll be back in LeBronto, essentially just shit-talking Toronto, and saying that LeBron James owns Toronto, which, there's some crazy stats about, like, they lost their two home games in Toronto. And the last time they lost two home games in a row was last year's playoffs when they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Because they're one of the best home teams, but they just lost their home field advantage. It's been fun, especially after the first round where it went seven games. It was a lot closer. This team, the Toronto Raptors, do not seem to know how to combat the best player in the game, so it's been fun to see. But as for other things, I've been watching more Mythbusters. I finished season 7, which is kind of the season where Carrie is pregnant and doing some crazy stuff while being pregnant, like they do the wanted myth, trying to curve the bullets, and you see her just fucking swinging a gun, shooting it with I think she said it was 6 months pregnant then.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, this is fucking ridiculous.
Probably felt good for her, though.
Yeah. and just seeing all three of them, they're trying to hit a target, but because they're swinging the gun, trying to curb it, none of them hit it. It's there's some really good miss here. Like it's our first duct taped episode, where they build like an actual boat out of duct tape, which works pretty well.
Really? It didn't seem.
No, they did a lot of planning. And they use kind of a wireframe for it, of like a normal boat, and just use the duct tape, plenty of it to just create like a skin, a very tight skin on it, so it does not sink. And they took it out and did pretty well with it. They also picked up a car with duct tape, essentially like a metal bar, and made a long strands of it to stick to the sides of the car, and had enough to pick it up. Mm. It's like, that shit is just fucking crazy as a material, because it's the adhesive is really good on that stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, remember, the reason it's called duct tape is because it was originally designed to seal up holes on air ducts. And air ducts...
originally used in World War II?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, air ducts fucking deal with a lot of air pressure in a day. So it has to be strong. Yeah. So I'm not surprised that shit can lift a car.
Yeah, because it's a fabric with... a strong fabric with really strong adhesive on it. And I've definitely seen like the other side of it where you're trying to peel it off and it just leaves that adhesive on. It's like, yeah, this is just nasty shit.
It's also good for taking out really small splinters that you can't see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's incredibly useful, and I'm looking forward to getting some of their later ones, because I know there's one later on where they get on a stranded island. They kind of just strand themselves and use duct tape to do a bunch of stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
They do some really cool stuff with that. I also watched the first season of Dirty Jobs.
Mm.
It's the other big Discovery show of the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Oh, yeah.
Especially this first season. I forgot how many of these like segments they put in one episode. Some of it's like five or six of them, where he's just doing some really dirty shit.
Oh, yeah.
Including actually cleaning out a woman's basement that had, while they were out on vacation, the sewer line just decided to shoot a bunch of the neighborhood's crap through their toilet. And the aftermath
for the love
is
of God.
Just...
yep. That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Working with the company that was doing that, and finding mold on a lot of their shit, and having to sort of be really careful, because once you start messing with it, it can just send out spores. Mm-hmm. Spores. And yeah, it's a fun show seeing him sort of go through some of these really awful jobs and weird jobs as well. And it's also kind of one of the other Discovery shows actually started in this season. They went to a pest control company, I think in Louisiana, I think around New Orleans, called VexCon. And I guess that segment did really well. Those people got their own show, doing their own like pest control shit. But probably one of the best ones was... the sewer inspector episode where they go under the sewers in San Francisco, where the sewer tunnels are, they say 5 feet tall, 3 feet wide. But because of the buildup, it can be, 3 or 4 feet tall and like 2 feet wide. And essentially kind of have to bend over backward, not backwards, but, just kind of be completely bent over just to get through, having rats and, roaches, all that sort of stuff running around.
Yeah.
And having to just inspect the, looking for cracks and shit.
Yeah.
Because if that stuff gets real bad, the whole street just collapses.
Yep.
And those are sewers that were put in about 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, That's a really fun show. I'm looking forward to watching some more of it. And for games, I've been playing Fortnite for the most part. I finished up Season 3 pretty well. I managed to make my V-Bucks back just in time for the end of the season. And there's some really cool stuff going on by the end of the season, because there's the... This is not really a comet if it's going to actually hit the island, but it's a meteor. And by the end of the matches, there would be just like little meteorites that break off of it and just crash into the map.
Mm-hmm.
So people's stuff they're building can just get destroyed by this stuff. And it was a really cool twist to that stuff. Be able to just have some of this shit just fall onto people. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I made enough so that I could just essentially do the Season 4 Battle Pass for free, essentially. Which I do like that kind of system where I put in the initial $10 to get the Season 3 Battle Pass and made that money back so that I can just put it into, roll it over into Season 4 for their Battle Pass. I'll probably talk more about that on Sunday, but they did some really cool stuff now that the meteor has struck the island.
Mm-hmm.
It basically changed up the whole map. So the stuff that people thought was going to happen, like it was going to take down just like one specific area of the map, was not true.
Mm.
But they just kind of added a lot of stuff, and like the biggest thing that I'm excited about is just the ability to, for the different cosmetics to just select random. So it just picks randomly one of the things I have, which is especially good for like they have loading screen images that are in there, and it's like you just picked one. It's like, yeah, but I got like six here. Why don't you just fucking pick one? It doesn't fucking matter. They're fucking loading screen images. Mm-hmm. And so now there's a random option, so it just picks a different one. And it's like, you know, it would be nice to just happen a little sooner, but it's nice to have it now. So, yeah, that's been pretty good. And that's kind of it.
All right. All right, well, it's my turn. As everybody knows, I finished Yakuza 6, so I've been doing fighting game stuff. I've been playing Guilty Gear Rev 2, you know, Revelator 2. And I've pretty much finished that game now. I finished the story mode, and I also finished all three of the after story parts. God damn, that third story after story part. You would never believe that such a great mystery would be around who collapsed a pudding, but there it is, and it ends on just the most what-the-fuck way possible. I don't want to spoil it because it's just so goddamn hilarious and weird, but if you get a chance, you got to watch it yourself. Maybe you can find it on YouTube, I don't know, but it's hilarious. Other than that, basically still getting my daily binge of Netflix anime. I finished Fate Stay Night Unlimited Blade Works, which was great. Fantastic series. I love the way it ended. And so now that I've got, you know, Fate Zero and Fate Apocrypha to be watching still. Been thinking maybe giving Violet Evergarden a try. I've heard good things about it. And yes, Agretzko.
Because you can't have enough death metal pandas.
Nope. I've watched the whole series now.
Good.
Yes, it's good. It hits a... There are parts that just hit a little too close to home for me, though, I won't lie.
Yeah.
There are parts of it that are very specific to Japanese culture, but somehow still way relatable. Like the whole thing about the money gift at the wedding, you know? But yeah, just the sort of struggles of being an office worker, a millennial office worker. Working under a generation that thinks you're a bunch of slackers and having to deal with like the office kiss ass and the the, you know, the supervisor that dumps all their work on you. And you know, I'm not surprised this show kind of blew up in the last week, because yeah, it's fucking everywhere now. If you've been paying attention to the internet, everybody fucking loves it. And for good reason, because of just how weirdly relatable it all is. And also, yeah, it's true. The death metal karaoke parts are fucking the highlight of the show. They really are. And it works best not in just the original Japanese and in the English dub, too. Something about, you know, this adorable little Sanrio character suddenly, you know, spontaneously having corpse paint and shrieking at the top of their lungs. You know, lightning, grenadier, vengeance! You know, that's still my favorite part. But yeah, it's great. It's amazing. You need to watch it. It's only, what was it, 10 episodes?
Yeah.
And they're like 15 minutes each, so let's see, it's about 2.5 hours. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, it's good, and you will be hunting on YouTube to try and find those death metal songs. Give it time, they'll be on there. And of course, the 2-hour loop of Finico's laugh. That. Yeah, so, and that, oh yeah, it's fucking hot!
You're just noticing this.
Yeah. It's really fucking hot. It has not been under 84 this whole week.
Yeah.
And I'm having to go, you know, I'm going out and doing my daily walk, and coming home basically feeling like I just slammed the fucking Atlantic.
Well, we've had the air conditioner on 2 days this week, so I, you know, you've got to complain. 98 humidity, 98% humidity we had.
Yeah.
But we also had softball size hail very nearby,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy looking shit. Looks like kidney stones, like on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Big steroids.
Apparently, God needs to start drinking more water because he's got kidney stones again. But, yeah, so that's pretty much been my week. Anybody got anything else that they want to add before we move on? No?
Nope, all good here.
All right, well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I don't know if y'all remember a couple shows back, I talked a bit about the unauthorized Atari ST sequel to the original Street Fighter, which was called Human Killing Machine.
Yeah.
And that got me sort of hunting around for just notoriously shitty off-brand fighting games that have, you know, because, again, fighting games were the shit in the 90s, and everybody was trying to get in on it. And, you know, there are a few hidden gems out there, but most of it is digitized feces. And there's this one particular series that was a thing for a little while. It was something that was whispered about in the darker parts of the gaming internet world, because on top of being really, really terrible, and make no mistake, it's awful, it was basically meant as a porno fighting game.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, he knows exactly what I'm talking about, because, like me, he's been around the block a bit. And this game was only whispered about in hushes, and, you know, before the internet actually became like a major thing, you know. But it was always the game people talked about where they take their clothes off. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the infamous franchise, I guess? That was Strip Fighter. Now, I'm only linking to the franchise link at Giant Bomb because I don't want to be fucking associated with this shit.
I can't say I blame you.
Mostly because on top of the fact that it was just a naked, like, extreme, no pun intended, very naked cash-in on Street Fighter. Literally, the first installment was called Street Fighter 2.
Mm-hmm.
Just right off the fucking bat. And by the way, it was PC only. This was never in arcades.
No.
Because
is coming out of her butt?
I will explain. Give me a second. I will explain.
I think I'm going to need you to.
Okay, so Street Fighter 2 and just the Street Fighter ? Franchise originated back in the mid-90s. It was a PC exclusive made by, I'm guessing, some sort of doujin company that I'm guessing was maybe two people, because even for the mid-90s indie gaming, this shit looks so low budget.
Yeah.
It was it was a series of, it was an all-female roster, and the object of the game was, again, it was basically a Street Fighter clone, you know, best of three.
Right.
And the thing was, is that every time you fought them, if you beat them, first round, you'll see them in skimpy clothing, in these really awful, like, digitized, pixelated photos of quote-unquote real women that 6-1 didn't really even look like the fighter you were fighting.
Nope.
Just vaguely. And then if you fought them again and beat them on the second round, they would completely strip.
Yeah.
And give you, like, this really creepy winking animation. So you're thinking, okay, so what type of women characters are we playing in this game? It's kind of the sort of the stereotype gambit, you know, if you're Japanese. So you had the main, I guess, main fighter who was sort of like a Chun-Li / Ryoko knockoff, sort of Mai Shiranui-esque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Karate Girl, in other words. You know, every fucking fighting game back then had one.
Mm-hmm.
And she would do things like, you know, high kicks because she wore really skimpy panties and showing her ass off a lot. You know, stuff like that. Then you had the French dominatrix. You can kind of guess what her move set was based around.
Whips.
Whips, high kicks, butt smashes. You had this one character called Medusa, who you fought in random, nondescript Greco-Roman ruins, who only wore a snake. That's it, just a snake.
Yep.
And she didn't walk either. She would just sort of shimmy around like she was supposed to be a snake.
Oh my god.
Instead, she just looked like a really bad backup dancer. And one of her main attacks was she would straight up take that snake off and whip you with it.
Yep.
But probably my favorite character of the entire line of... Oh, there was an... this was mostly like nondescript XBs of other characters, move-wise especially. There was like one who was like the American chick who looked like a Final Fight reject.
Hmm.
You know, like somewhere across... You know what I look like, that and across with Guile.
Yeah.
Move list included. But my favorite character by far, and I'm guessing for lack of a better word, she's kind of the boss of the game, because there wasn't really a boss character, really. In fact, there wasn't really a storyline, period. You didn't even get an ending, a proper ending. Just sort of like a slideshow of all the your conquests, for lack of a better term. She was this giant, full-figured South American woman of nondescript ethnicity. Wore a mask, was basically like a luchador. And she was basically the Zangief knockoff.
Yep.
And you're thinking, okay, so what were her moves? Well, she had, of course, the pile driver, which, not entirely unlike zombies, except, you know, they shove their face into their crotch.
Of course.
And then there was their version of the spinning lariat.
Hmm.
You know, yeah. Or the spinning, what was it? It had a couple different words, the spinning lariat, the spinning clothesline was one I heard a lot, except instead of using her arms, she just whips out her enormous tips and spins around.
Spinning booby attack, huh?
Yeah, that's...
You want me to... Because I can give you... Just... Look, I'm... Look, I'll show you. I'll fucking show you. Look at this shit.
Yeah.
Look at this shit. I'm gonna fucking...
While you find that, I should probably point out that... one of the Strip Fighters, actually two of them, actually ended up on the PC Engine because Hudson Soft apparently didn't understand what they were getting into. So, yeah, that happened.
See what I mean?
Oh my god.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a thing.
That's a something, all right.
Yeah.
They don't work that way.
Well, did you think they fucking knew that?
Well?
That's not how breasts work, people.
Yeah.
I mean, well, when you're on the teacups now, that's a different thing.
Well, I mean, you know what? I'm not even going to fucking dignify this shit with a response. But, God.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the thing. All of this is bad enough, but there's one other aspect of this game that's even worse, and that's the fucking soundtrack.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just avoid at all costs, please.
Because it is... This is why I would suggest, hey, you can actually watch like a whole playthrough of this on YouTube, I think, somewhere.
Yeah, there's a few.
But I don't recommend you do it with high volume because the soundtrack is ear-aching in its badness.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Like, it will legit deafen you.
Yeah.
Just lots of the worst kind of digital squeaks and shrieks and, you know, rusty jangling. Just the worst kind. But here's the thing. This wasn't the last Strip Fighter game. There were two more.
Yep.
And those actually had rape super moves. Because Japan.
Yep, because Japan. And two of those games, as I mentioned earlier, ended up on the PC Engine.
Yep. And you know what's even, you know, and of course, the thing is, as you can probably guess, there would be imitators that would come later. Like the infamous Rape Fighter.
Yeah, that's, I guess, maybe, well, Thrill Kill, but that's more of a violent one. I guess you could consider Arcana Heart as kind of an imitator of that, only it's actually good.
Yep.
And they don't strip, so, yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, in one sort of weird way, it was kind of a pioneer. Yeah. And being basically the first fighting game with an all-female cast.
Yep. It was just awful. That's all there was to it.
Yeah, legit fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And, again, we only linked to the Giant Bomb franchise link because, again, I don't want to be fucking associated with this shit. if you really want to see more, go on YouTube, hunt the internet, you'll find it.
Yeah.
But honestly, it ain't worth it. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. You will never be able to unlearn this.
Today I learned and wish I hadn't.
Yeah.
That should be a new subreddit.
Yeah. All right. Now, it is now time to start the show proper. And we got to start off, as always, our asshole of the week. And our asshole of the week is Mr. Don Blankenship, a Senate candidate from West Virginia who's trying to go after Mitch McConnell. Now, there's a lot of good reasons to go after Mitch McConnell. The man is craven to the bone, nakedly corrupt, amoral, has no real political positions. That's probably how he became speaker, how he became the fucking party whip. But this guy went after none of them. he calls him Cocaine Mitch.
Yep. He goes after his family.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, Mitch McConnell is married to a Chinese-American woman. And that Chinese-American woman, she is heir to a very large Chinese company who her father is, I guess, head of, or somewhere in the board of directors, somewhere. So Mr. Blankenship went on and on about Mr. McConnell's China family and China people.
Yep.
It was basically one step away from going, Ching Chong, Ling Long, chopsticks.
And meanwhile, all the way through the ad is him having the charisma of a potato.
Yeah. Do you remember a while back when it was sort of a meme going around? The guy who was running for governor of Louisiana named Basil Marceau, who was basically about as listless and charismatic as a caterpillar. Yeah, it's kind of like that. The dude's just got like this dead-eye stare, monotone speaking. He keeps pawing these two little girls, trying to, you know, like I'm a family man, you know, that type of shit.
Yeah, and you know the history of Mr. Blankenship?
Go ahead and tell us.
So he ran a coal mine. And I think in 2010, they had a collapse.
Yep.
29 miners died. All the while, he was constantly going on about, oh, there's an earthquake. Oh, this is terrible. All this stuff. Uh-huh. Even harassing the families that wanted information, want to know if their loved ones were dead or not. What was going on? And he was just harassing them. And along this way, he eventually gets found guilty for some sort of safety thing, not having the right safety protocols here and putting his workers at risk. Only goes to prison for 1 year.
Yep.
Probably should have gone for a lot longer. But, hey. And so, yeah, he is a convict running for the Senate. One of a few that the GOP has running in various races. But yeah, he's not a very nice guy, and John Oliver featured him during his episode about coal. Not the main one, but likened him to, showed him at some rally he was at where he wore a very over-the-top, like, America outfit.
Oh, yeah.
And sort of likened him to the Mr. Donuts guy, or the Time for Donuts guy.
Yeah.
Has that same sort of mustache.
Yeah.
Like if he fucked an American flag.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But yeah, for this ad itself, which the link they have goes to Vimeo. Vimeo version of it. So just to give you an idea of the level these people are running at. But yeah, so he starts off saying things like Swamp Captain Mitch McConnell. Yep. Has created millions of jobs for China people. See, while doing so, Mitch has gotten rich. In fact, his China family has given him tens of millions of dollars.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so his wife is Elaine Chao, whose parents moved to the United States from Taiwan about 60 years ago and launched a shipping company from New York. Let's see. McConnell told Fox News last month after Blankenship first made racially charged comments about his family. My father-in-law is an American who lives in New York. I don't have any comment about ridiculous observations like that. And I guess somebody talked to his people and got a quote from him arguing that the ad is not racist. Here's what he said. They've always said about me, West Virginia people. Is West Virginia people racist? We are confused on our staff as to how it can be racist when there's no mention of a race.
It's said no China people, dipshit. Seriously.
Yeah, he's like, he's thinking he's abstract enough instead of just saying Chinaman. There's no race. Races are Negro, White Caucasian, Hispanic, Asian. There's no mention of a race. I've never used a race word.
Can I borrow a hammer?
Yeah. Cause I think we found a nail.
It's late.
And then he called Mitch McConnell Cocaine Mitch, a reference to drugs being found aboard a ship owned by Chow's family in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a fucking hell of a pull.
Mm-hmm.
Something nobody would know about if it wasn't for this dipshit.
Mm.
And his people trying to dig up bad stuff. But yeah.
Mm.
Oh yeah, see there's only, I don't know where this quote comes from. Chris Pack, the spokesman for McConnell. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some nice quotes here from McConnell's people. Mm-hmm. There's only one candidate in this race, maybe in the history of candidates running for U.S. Senate, who has ever entertained the idea of becoming Chinese. His name is ex-convict Don Blankenship. There's another guy named Josh Holmes, his top political advisor. Tweeted out, for those asking, this is my response to West Virginia Roy Moore.
Mm-hmm.
This clown is a walking, talking case study for the limitation of a person's, a prison's ability to rehabilitate. Which that is actually pretty good.
Mm.
Just shitting on him as a convict.
Yep.
Did not get rehabilitated at all in prison.
Don't you just love our modern political climate?
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah,
I'm so happy.
Yeah, I was watching TV during my break earlier today.
Yeah.
And I forget what channel it was on. But the break had like five or six commercials, all of them political ads. All of them conservative as well.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically mentioning everybody's conservative.
Yep.
They're trying to figure out who has sucked Trump's dick the most.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the most Trumpiest of these people? It's like, yeah, you're like one. There's a guy named Mike DeWine is running for governor as a conservative. I guess he was a senator during the same time that Hillary was senator.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing they're running down our throats is that he voted similarly to Hillary a bunch of times, which no context to that. It's like, oh, did Republicans also vote the same way on these bills? Like, they're never going to give any of that
information. No.
So the whole, what they just keep saying is he's too liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Then he runs his own campaign saying the woman, I think it's Mary Taylor, that he is, he says that she, I don't know, it's all stupid bullshit.
Mm.
And it's annoying to watch live TV because all these fucking stupid ads. Apparently a former Ohio State Buckeye receiver is running for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Gonzalez, he's running as a conservative.
Mm.
It's like, he's going to protect our jobs. I don't know about that. He was a mid-rate wide receiver for a college football team. That's all anybody knows him for. And we got another 5 or 6 months of that shit. We're just in primary season.
Yay! Yeah, you know, political ads really, it's disgusting. I don't watch TV. That's a lot of the reason why.
Yep. But unfortunately, when you watch, say, Crunchyroll, like I do, sometimes they bleed into that, too. So
you got to put an ad blocker.
It's on my PS4. So.
Oh, no. Why? Why do you do this to yourself?
So I can watch TV.
They figured out how to get into your anime.
Yeah. But, yeah, so we now move on from our asshole of the week to our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is, you already know who it is, it's Michelle Wolf, who this year, I guess, keynoted or introduced or whatever the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
She did the main comedy.
Yeah. And she basically went up there and she tore everyone a new asshole.
Yeah, and conservatives were obviously offended.
And the media was offended for them.
Yeah, in a way that's not great.
Yeah.
And the White House Correspondents Association also threw her under the bus for an event that celebrates the First Amendment. They threw somebody under the bus for being honest.
Yep.
This isn't GOP honest where it's, we got to be as racist as possible.
No. Because, see, that's the thing. They're the ones who scream all about free speech and, you know, down with PC culture. They can give it, but they sure as hell can't take it.
Yep. She did a lot of great burns. She made fun
of man, she shat on
everybody.
On everybody, but especially Sanders. Holy shit.
She did a bit of having the crowd yell, she was doing a Trump is so broke, so she had the crowd yell, how broke is he? And just made fun of jokes at his expense. Even got to a point talking about the media, like, yeah, he has made so much money for you guys. You ought to throw some money his way because he has no money.
Mm-hmm.
But also, yeah, talked about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Yeah, she said she is a liar. Let's see. Yeah, they have a quote here. I actually really like Sarah. I think she's very resourceful. She burns facts. And she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies. And the whole thing here is Sarah Huckabee Sanders is sitting like two or three people to her.
Oh, yeah. And she can't go anywhere. She has to sit there and fucking take it.
And she has that same sour face she always has.
Oh, yeah. It was just the greatest.
Yeah. Yeah, here's a bit. She said, you guys are obsessed with Trump. Did you used to date him? Because you print. She's talking about the media. Because you pretend like you hate him, but I think you love him. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. You couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off him. If you're going to profit off of Trump, you should at least give him some money because he doesn't have any.
It's basically a way of saying, this shit has happened and you are all fucking culpable.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She made fun of Democrats just as a whole.
Yeah.
Saying that, you know, you guys are looking to win back the House and the Senate, but we know that you're going to lose to a guy named Mr. Pedophile Nazi Doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a doctor. made fun of Kellyanne Conway. It's like, why do you have her on your show? She just lies.
Yeah.
Made fun of, and people got offended on Sarah Huckabee Sanders' part, suggesting that she made fun of her looks, which she never did.
Mm-hmm.
She specifically said she did not want to make fun of any women's looks.
Uh-huh.
She actually made fun of Mitch McConnell's neck and Chris Christie's weight, but nobody's got offended for them. So that made her point. She talked about how, if a guy made those jokes at, you know, Mitch McConnell's and Chris Christie's extent, that they would get offended about that.
Yeah.
Talking about that sort of stuff. She said that she, you know, she doesn't regret anything she said.
Nope.
Which is the right way to go about it. And yeah, it's...
I have a feeling she's going to have a bright future in entertainment now.
Well, she's got a Netflix show coming up.
Yep, and it's probably going to do really well now.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, this is pretty much the reason why Colbert pretty quickly became big, because of the thing he did with W. That's pretty much, you know, like, he was already pretty successful on Comedy Central, but he was still sort of trailing Jon and The Daily Show. But after he did that White House Correspondents' Dinner thing, he pretty much equaled and sometimes surpassed The Daily Show in the ratings.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I should also point out that you know, this kind of thing happens a lot at the White House Correspondents' Dinners.
Yeah.
You know, they'll usually hire a comedian, and then they'll usually be, you know, there'll be some jibes and stuff. But Michelle Wolf just lit into everybody.
Yeah. I mean, with Stephen Colbert, he only did it passive aggressively through his character.
No.
Michelle Wolf just basically dropped trowel and took a giant dump on everyone.
Yeah.
It was glorious.
And a lot of people obviously shit on her, like, got really offended at the vulgarity. It's like, She didn't say anything worse than anything Trump has said as president.
Yeah.
You're holding a comedian to a higher standard than the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Even to the media. And yeah, I got some more lines from her. Yeah, before we get too far, a little bit about me. A lot of you might not know who I am. I'm 32 years old, which is an odd age. 10 years too young to host this event. And 20 years too old for Roy Moore. And I know as much as some of you might want me to. It's 2018 and I'm a woman, so you cannot shut me up. Unless you have Michael Cohen wire me $130,000. Michael, you can find me on Venmo under my porn star name, Reince Priebus. Which then they showed a shot of him giving a thumbs up to that joke. Like, people laughed at these jokes. Then they acted offended. There's a... I forget what the guy's name is, Schlapp? Who said he walked out because he was so offended.
Yeah.
And he is obviously a conservative. And he... You know, he's just obviously a guy who only hates that he made fun of... That she made fun of, you know, a lot of GOP people.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, the GOP controls pretty much two out of the three branches of government right now, so...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, here's a good Kellyanne Conway joke. You guys got to stop putting Kellyanne on your shows. All she does is lie. If you don't give her a platform, she has nowhere to lie. It's like that old saying, if a tree falls in the woods, how do we get Kellyanne under that tree? Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that she gets hurt, just stuck under a tree.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, of course, Ivanka. She was supposed to be an advocate for women, but it turns out she's about as helpful to women as an empty box of tampons. She's done nothing to satisfy women, so I guess like father, like daughter. yeah, and of course we have Sarah Huckabee Sanders. We're graced with Sarah's presence tonight. I have to say I'm a little starstruck. I love you as Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale. Mike Pence, if you haven't seen it, you would love it. I'm never really sure what to call Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You know, is it Sarah Sanders? Is it Sarah Huckabee Sanders? Is it Cousin Huckabee? Is it Auntie Huckabee Sanders? Like, what's Uncle Tom but for white women who disappoint other white women?
Oh, I know. That was fucking brutal.
Oh, I know. Aunt Coulter.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a tweet from Mike Huckabee, you know, Mr. Jokester Man. This is from before that event, I think. He said, if you lack sense of humor, get offended by slights you create, or just can't bring yourself to tolerate those you disagree with, do not watch my show tonight. You'll be triggered and will need a pony, popsicle, and a Play-Doh to cope. Then the next day, the White House Correspondents' Dinner was supposed to celebrate the First Amendment. Instead, they celebrate bullying, vulgarity, and hate. They got all dressed up so they would look nicer when they had a hired gun savagely attack their guests. Do they really wonder why America has no respect for them? Sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, who's the snowflake after all?
Yep. Alright, well then, it's now time to start the proper show proper. And we're going to start off with just... Fucking hell, I wish he would just duck down and go away, but no... Roy Moore has now come forward and has filed a suit against three of his accusers, alleging a political conspiracy.
Yep. Yeah, so this is essentially suggesting that, let's see, this was filed because the people of Alabama deserve to know the truth, said his attorney. The accusations made against Judge Moore during the U.S. Senate campaign arose from a political conspiracy to destroy his personal reputation and defeat him in the special Senate election for United States Senate.
Mm.
No, they rose up because they saw a man that had done heinous things was potentially going to win something, and then the people deserved to know who he really was.
Yep.
Like they
and who he was... was a fucking theocratic creeper who was basically trying to get his hands on underage girls.
Yep.
That's who he was. Who he is.
Yep. Let's see. Oh, yeah. She said later on, if someone was sexually abused, I believe the last thing they do is speak with the Washington Post.
I don't follow.
Somebody don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
This is just the Republicans' hatred of the Washington Post.
Yeah. They hate WAPO so much.
Yeah.
We got something in common.
It doesn't Trump call them like the Amazon Washington Post or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except it's not owned by Amazon.
No, it's owned by the guy who owns Amazon.
Yeah, it's owned by
Bezos. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
So he's still trying to get this further. At some point, Roy, you know, you might just have to just call it quits.
Yeah.
Because nobody's believing your shit.
Well, maybe he'll die of embarrassment.
God, I hope so.
I don't know, he's still kicking. He still has not conceded the election.
Yeah! People don't realize that. He still has not conceded that he lost that election.
Yeah, despite the fact that the candidate is about to be sworn into office, so...
Oh, yeah! Any second now.
Yes.
But, anyway, so, next up, you remember that weirdo who was Trump's personal physician? His doctor? He's come forward and basically surprised nobody by claiming that he dictated the letter giving him a glowing bill of health.
Yep, so...
Isn't this also the same doctor that had his office raided?
Mm.
Yep.
By Trump's people?
Yeah. Yeah, which they tried to say it's a normal thing because the White House doctors need his medical information or whatever. I don't know if I believe that, but the notion that Trump dictated that letter, that was very boastful. Where it said things like, his physical strength and stamina are extraordinary. If elected, Mr. Trump, I can state unequivocally, will be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. Like, that's all stuff that Trump would say about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, oh, but it gets better, because guess what? The Trump news doesn't end there.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Because guess who decided to become his new attorney, his newest lawyer, and then probably fucked it up in about 24 hours? Rudy Giuliani.
Yep.
Yeah, Chris, break it down.
Let's see. Wednesday nights, he was on Sean Hannity's show. Talking about various things, but eventually came around to the topic of the Stormy Daniels stuff. And he decided to say that, Trump has paid back Michael Cohen $130,000. Essentially, the president repaid it. And I guess with those four words, Giuliani kind of ruined the months of excuses and lies that the admin has been building up on this stuff.
Yeah. So basically it was like, no, we never did it paid. And now it's, yeah, he paid it, but it was completely legal.
Which, it's going to be investigated, because it's likely to be campaign finance laws that were broken.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, Trump told him to say this. That this is all planned between the two, and then now Trump has thrown Giuliani under the bus and said he doesn't have his facts straight. We're going to have to get him, you know, beat his ass now, I guess.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, after all this, Sean Hannity was, like, stunned to hear him say that.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they had him on the next day on Fox and Friends in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's... Like,
and he was trying to play it down the best. He's like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And now this is basically just blown up that whole thing.
Yeah. Campaign finance fraud, you know, big deal.
Yeah. And so now, obviously, Cohen's got to answer for this stuff. As well as they had, like, the next day, or they've had, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Say things like, I've had conversations with the president about this. There was no knowledge of any payments from the president. He's denied all of these allegations. He's also himself said he knows nothing about it. Said, you know, go talk to Cohen because he's the one that would know anything about this.
Oh dear. So the hits just keep on coming from the White House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it gets better. We're not done. Because Trump's personal Gestapo, a.k.a. ICE, has had an acting director for a while now, Tom Horman. But he's now had to step down. You know why? Because the Senate's never gotten around to confirming him.
Yep. Yeah, he was the deputy head of that department. Yeah. Got the nomination to become the actual head. And this, when they actually did this, was still like 10 months after Trump came into the presidency.
Yeah.
And so the Senate's always like, wait, why the fuck did it take you so long to do this? And they very much were very critical of the nomination and all that. Let's see, 18 Democratic senators sent a letter to the Department of Homeland Security last week asking why the administration took nearly 10 months to officially nominate an ICE director. And they asked why the department had not answered its questions of Homeland's handling of ICE when the agency was making radical and in some cases possibly illegal changes in immigration enforcement and practices.
Yeah, no shit.
So, yeah, this is good news, I guess. Kind of, sort of.
Well, I mean, he's gone, but the changes that he implemented are going to take time to get rid of.
Yeah. And who knows who's going to end up getting appointed anyway, so it's kind of like, kind of stuck with this until an administration change, basically.
Pretty much. Yeah. But, now, next up. So, back in Charlottesville, the world finally realized that, holy shit, there are Nazis marching in the streets, and holy shit, they're killing people.
Hmm.
And me and a lot of other people were, you know, sitting here and going, yeah, duh.
We effing told you so.
Yeah, like, talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yep.
We knew that shit was coming. We knew it was going to happen. It was only a matter of fucking time. No, you had to just, it's that whole, both sides, we need to listen to both sides. One side is that they want to put all the Jews into camps and destroy the Hebrew race. All right? They want to euthanize the quote-unquote mentally feeble. Okay? They want to forcibly put their seed into unwilling women and create a white ethno-state. All right? What part of that sounds like, we just need to listen to the other side. They just want to be heard. Fuck you.
Mm.
But the thing is, Heather Heyer wasn't the only victim that day. There was also DeAndre Harris. DeAndre Harris was the black guy who got ganged up on and beaten by a group of white supremacists in that parking garage.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Jacob Goodwin, one of the guys that beat on him, and by the way, three people have been arrested on this. The first one, Jacob Goodwin, he's been found guilty.
Yep, felony.
He's going to jail.
Yeah, felony malicious wounding.
Which has like a minimum of like 10 years.
Yeah, I think the jury's recommended sentence is 10 years.
Yeah.
And a $20,000 fine. He's getting sentenced on August 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And they got three other men arrested in connection with it. They have upcoming trials. And, yeah.
Good.
And whatever you do, don't let anyone on the internet think you that these fuckers deserve less. Okay? Don't let them make you like, well, they were fearing for their lives. This guy was, he had, like, he had body protection armor and pepper spray, and he was coming for a fight. No, he was coming to protect himself because he knows how these fuckers operate.
Yeah, he got a broken arm, spinal injury, and 8 staples for a head lacerations.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you want to know why Antifa has to be, why does Antifa have to be so violent? Why can't they just, protest in peace? We fucking try. But some of these fuckers you talk about how Antifa comes for a fight. Those other fuckers come for a fight. Okay? They want to beat on people. That's their fucking MO.
And sort of today's date is the anniversary of the Kent State shooting.
Yep.
I was sort of reading up some stuff about that. And it's weird how much that kind of rings true with today. Because they had that shooting, and sort of immediately after it, hundreds of schools across the country had to shut down because students walked out.
Yeah.
And 100,000 marched on the in Washington.
Yeah. And for those who are wondering, in Kent State, that was a National Guard troop turning around and firing upon student protesters.
Yeah, as the students are walking away.
Yeah.
And yeah, not even all the people that were killed or hurt were protesters.
Nope.
A number of them were just having to be nearby. And also, I think people dug up a Gallup poll that happened afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something like 56% of people thought the students deserved it.
Yeah.
Like 11% only blamed the National Guard for that.
Yep.
Yeah, like there's right. a lot of fear mongering and misinformation, like people suggesting, oh, some of the National Guardsmen were killed.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was a sniper shooting at them. It's like, no, there wasn't any of that. The kids were throwing stuff, but there's no reason they should have had live ammunition.
Yeah. Keep in mind, the kids were throwing stuff. Yeah, these guys had, like, helmets and body armor and assault rifles.
And loaded assault rifles.
Loaded assault rifles with live ammunition. They were in no danger.
Yeah.
But they were a good number of feet away from the students to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, there's actually a photo that was taken of the moment the guard turned around and fired upon them.
Yeah.
They weren't the only troop that were there. There was, like, five or other, squadrons of National Guard that were there. They were all marching away. It was these one group of assholes who decided to turn around. And they weren't fucking, like, firing randomly either. They were fucking down on one knee aiming and firing.
Yep.
This wasn't a fucking accident.
Yeah, the only real violent thing that happened is they burned down the ROTC building, which wasn't even students that did that.
Yeah.
It was,
for the record, this was still in the midst of the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And fuck the ROTC.
Yeah, okay? If you thought there was anti-government sentiments before the Kent State shooting,
yeah,
that fucking made it worse.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, now the government is taking out protesters.
Yeah.
And now you know why, you know, police typically get involved with protesters to help make things safer, mm-hmm. you know, help them get around more easily so we can avoid situations like that where you have essentially the government, you know, hunting down people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just made the spot where that shooting happened a national landmark.
Yep. Yeah, there's a memorial there now.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for the Kent State shooting, you would not have had Devo.
Mm-hmm.
Their name is actually Devolution.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of named in the sort of the mindset of like, oh, we're devolving.
Yeah. Also, it was the subject of that famous Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song.
Yeah.
Ohio, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is on my Neil Young Greatest Hits album I have, so.
Yeah, and the lead singer of The Pretenders was also there.
Yep.
As well as, like, one of the most famous college football coaches,
mm-hmm.
Nick Saban. He was on campus at that time.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucked up shit that happened around that.
Yeah. And here's the worst part. This wasn't the first, example of either military or National Guard firing upon students. It actually happened a couple years before in the early 60s at Jackson College. You know the reason why you didn't hear about that? Because Jackson was an all-black college.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
And I think the body count was actually higher, too. But that's not me like putting a value judgment or anything, because they were both awful tragedies. It's just sort of a commentary on how America was back then,
and still hasn't grown
to a certain extent. Yeah,
like the notion of using this protest to commit your own vandalism is something that happened during the Women's March right after Trump got elected, or before he got sworn in.
Yeah.
Because remember, the people were smashing open windows in buildings and stealing shit. It's like, oh, that's Antifa for you. It's like, no, that wasn't Antifa.
Yeah, that was just...
shit about that.
Those guys show up every time there's a rally.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because rallies make good cover for that shit.
Yeah, people try to take advantage of chaos in a way and think they're going to get away with stuff.
Yeah.
And usually they don't.
And I'll be completely honest. Fuck, if I was in the middle of the riot, I'd probably steal a color TV too. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so moving on from there, here's some good news. Cambridge Analytica is dead.
Sort of.
Here's the bad news. The former directors of that company have now got another shell company.
God.
So they just changed names, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's called Emerdata.
Mm-hmm.
Emerdata. I think they actually started that a while back. But now they got one shell company to another shell company.
Yeah.
We could probably do a whole show on Cambridge Analytica by itself, because what they did is so heinous and terrible, and yet they've basically suffered no fucking consequences because of it.
No, but at least Facebook is taking it seriously now,
or at least saying they are. But.
Yeah,
like they're obviously happy that Cambridge Analytica is shutting down, but they know that is just a formality.
Yeah.
That they're going to keep working on this and investigation of whatever they're doing.
As a general rule, if you're on Facebook and you see those weird kind of surveys like which Game of Thrones character are you, or which Star Wars planet would you live on, just don't take those.
No, avoid them at all possible.
Yeah.
Because they are basically collecting your data and then selling it to the highest bidder.
Yeah, and if you have answered them in the past, go to your privacy settings and block that app from,
Yeah. Yeah, because I have. That's what I did. So.
Yeah. And that's all sort of tied into, like, when you download apps on your phone. Like, they give you, like, a list of, oh, here's, do you, agree to let them have access to, this. It's like, there's almost no context to any of that.
No.
It's like, why do you need access?
And of course, if you say, no, I disagree, they won't let you download the app. So.
Yeah, it's like, why do you need access to my photos? Is that so you can just save stuff to it? Like, in that case, okay. If it's to, analyze them, scan them, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck no.
Yeah. This is getting a little bit better with the newer versions of iOS and Android, because... iOS in particular will only asks for those permissions when you actually go to use a function that would use them.
Okay.
There's that. Android is starting to do the same thing, and they're actually looking to be a bit more granular in that it will actually tell you why it wants that permission.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why does this game need to get access to my, phone contacts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. Fuck you, Cambridge Analytica. You guys suck.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, moving on. Scotland. Country of Scotland. Some of my ancestors are from there. It has become the first country to enact minimum pricing for alcohol because of all the fucking alcohol-related deaths that are in Scotland.
Hmm.
Yeah, they've been fairly well devastated by alcohol-related deaths, especially because a lot of alcohol is cheap as shit there.
Oh, God, yes, it is. They might as well put it in the fucking water fountains. It's so cheap over there.
Yeah, I remember the Giant Bomb guys talking about Buckfast,
which
is like a fortified wine that became really popular because it was incredibly cheap.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of stuff like that, so... they have enacted a minimum price for alcohol to raise the prices of this stuff. So that's especially like the people with less money are less able to just buy shit tons of this stuff and kind of drown themselves in alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they say a standard 750 milliliter, 13% bottle of wine cannot be sold less than 488 pounds, which I think is like $6.50.
Yeah, about 650.
Yeah, 700 milliliter, 40% bottle of whiskey for 14 pounds, which I think is about like $19-$20.
Yep.
And 2 liters of 5% cider for 5 pounds, which is about $7.
Hmm.
Yeah, there is no grace period, so it begins immediately. And if the stores don't comply, their licenses could be removed immediately.
Yeah.
They say 22 people die from alcohol-related illnesses in Scotland every week, which costs the Scotland health system about £3 billion annually.
Yeah. Don't you wish they'd treat the gun and ammo industry like that over here?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then they wouldn't get the money from the gun people.
Yeah.
Guess who's speaking at a NRA event pretty soon? Mm-hmm. Trump.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we don't need to hear him.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so Scotland has the highest number of deaths for its population compared to any other part of the UK. There were 7,327 alcohol-specific deaths across the UK in 2016. They average about 31 male deaths related to alcohol for every 100,000 men in Scotland. Northern Ireland is at 22. England and Wales is about 14.6.
Mm-hmm.
I
just wonder how that alcohol managed to stay that cheap.
I think it's probably like the same way that when they put games on sale for real cheap on Steam, it's like you buy it en masse.
Hmm.
It's such an amount that it makes up for whatever per unit difference you're losing.
Maybe.
That it's just sort of you bring so much money in just with this that it makes up for losing, you know, half of whatever you could be getting for that stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they suggest like within the first year they expect there'll be about 60 less deaths. And yeah.
Well, I hope it works. I mean, this is a problem that, well, the solution does seem obvious enough. If alcohol is too cheap and people are dying from it, maybe raising the price is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It just seems to me like the market should have corrected for itself, but didn't. So,
no.
Strange. Big alcohol has have some influence over there. Maybe.
Yeah. That demon rum, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, next up. All right, so bus drivers in Japan have decided that they're going to go on strike. They are currently striking because they want better job security, and they're doing this by going about it by probably the single most Japanese way possible. They're still working their usual routes. They're just not accepting any fares.
Yep. So yeah, this is in Okayama. They are working with Ryobi Group.
Uh-huh.
And I guess there is another competing group that has just started working in a number of the same lines as, yeah, Megarin began operating on April 27th, with some routes overlapping those of Ryobi and being a bit cheaper. And also, I guess the Megarin buses have cute faces on them.
Mm-hmm.
They put, like, little eyes on the front of them. I got a picture in the article. So yeah, Ryobi drivers are not feeling great about their job security. So they made a demand to get whatever accommodations they are asking for. They don't describe them here, but the obvious sort of way that you would strike is just stop showing up. But they feared that management would use that against them.
Yeah, just sack them. Yeah. So
saying they put their own needs before the customers.
Yeah. So they decided to go about it in just just the most Japanese way they possibly could. Basically shame them by still working their usual routes, you know, same regular schedules, up. Just not taking the money.
Mm. Yeah, and actually this is not really a Japanese thing. This has happened before in Australia.
Yeah.
Brisbane and Sydney had fare free days as part of labor disputes last year. And the earliest documented case of this sort of thing happening actually happened in Cleveland, 1944, where streetcar workers refused to take fares,
yeah,
but still kept working.
And I got to say, this is a really effective tactic because...
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah.
You know, the drivers work, the passengers still get to where they're going, but the company makes no money.
Yeah. Yep.
They lose money because they're using up fuel and all that.
Yeah.
And I guess they also include comments from the internet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This isn't good at all. They're working for free. I think stopping the buses altogether would put more pressure on management. The idea is neat, but I think the money saved from wages and the value of free advertisement this action is creating means the company is still doing okay.
No, they're not, because they're not getting any money. They're actually losing.
This is a great idea. I like that they are trying different ways to get what they want. I heard they do this in Australia, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, it did.
I think it's a good way to protect the company image in the long run, but I wonder how this affects both sides' bargaining positions.
Well, the company's bargaining position, not so hot. Workers, much higher.
Mm-hmm.
That's... Yep. How that particular thing works. Anyways. Good on them. I want them to get paid fairly for the jobs that they do. I mean, I think that's what everybody wants, really, is to be paid fairly for what they do.
Yeah.
Regardless of what that is.
Okay. But, alright, so, in a city in both North Carolina and Alabama... there has been this weird epidemic of eye cancer, a very rare kind of eye cancer. It's been puzzling doctors, and it's basically, it just showed up pretty much en masse in a very short amount of time, and nobody's really sure why.
Yeah, it is ocular melanoma. They say it occurs in about 6 out of every 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this is in Huntersville, North Carolina. 18 people have been diagnosed with this. I don't know how many in Alabama, but yeah, so I guess they reported this on Monday, CBS News, and a bunch of people reached out to say they or someone they know have also had this rare cancer. They interviewed 4 women. One of them had it. Or one of the 4 women set up a Facebook page for these people.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten tons of comments from not only local people, but people all around the world. But yeah, the nice thing about that is that they know that they're not alone. That this is something that a bunch of people are going through. But yeah, the sort of notion that this is happening to a bunch of people in these concentrated areas is very odd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's troubling because if... You know, there's a rash of cases like this. There's probably something there that's causing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they just don't know what could be causing it. The Alabama city is Auburn.
Mm.
And particularly even people going to Auburn University.
Yep.
They had 4 people specifically who had attended that college.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're kind of in the process of trying to set up funding to be able to study this rare cancer and sort of trying to figure out where this came from.
Mm-hmm.
They have ongoing studies in North Carolina that have not revealed the cause yet. Unfortunately, Alabama is being Alabama, and they're refusing to fund any of this stuff, as well as Auburn University's declined to offer funding for these studies.
Mm-hmm.
The university has set up a task force, but yeah, they're saying more needs to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's disconcerting.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, eye cancer, not fun.
No.
It's especially one of those things where it's like, yeah, I have very little vision as it is, and it's like thinking about something like that is like terrifying. It's like, would not want.
Yeah, this is one that's, well, essentially, one of the people I talked to lost almost all of their vision in their right eye.
Hmm.
So yeah, it's very much one that's going to most likely blind you.
Yeah.
So. At least partially.
Mm. But, all right, so up next, we got a news from the corporate world. T-Mobile and Sprint have agreed that they want to merge. They've agreed on a merger deal, but we're still not sure if it's going to be able to go through for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I guess it's a merger that they've been trying to do for several years now.
Yeah.
The Obama administration was very much against it.
Yeah, for obvious reasons.
Well, back then, it actually wasn't T-Mobile and Sprint. It was T-Mobile and AT&T. And that, I could kind of see why you'd want to not have that happen. But, yeah. With this administration and this FCC, and yeah, it's going to go through.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, Sprint and T-Mobile first discussed a merger in 2014, but scrapped it because of concerns about regulatory challenges from the Obama administration.
Yeah.
They noted the deal was blocked because regulators determined that the wireless market could support four major players and had them compete benefit consumers. And so now they have to convince the Justice Department that circumstances have changed so much that it's necessary to go down to three major providers, which is going to be a bit tough.
Yeah, I think this happens. Honestly.
Yeah,
they're. This is going to be T-Mobile is going to be the major name here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their CEO has been going nuts on Twitter, announcing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And while this does take away consumer choice, basically down to three major carriers, it does put them above AT&T if you look at the combined coverage.
Yeah.
And combined resources now, they end up with a good deal more that they can do as far as implementing 5G. So they can end up, you know, leapfrogging in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still. And these are the number three and number four providers here in the U.S.
Yeah. Three and four. If they merge, though, they become two. Number two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Also, if you are a Sprint customer, well, you're going to be getting a T-Mobile bill. Just point that out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I kind of wish they could have figured out another way to do this and actually compete, but it looks like the only way that they can manage to take on Verizon, the Verizons and the AT&T of the world, is to, like, you know, form Voltron or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
That's right. But, all right, so next up, from Australia, the world's oldest spider. It sadly died this week at the age of 43 years because of a wasp sting.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this fucking happens in Australia.
Yeah, it wouldn't fucking go down without a fight, apparently.
Yeah, this is a trapdoor spider named number 16. So yeah, they were doing a long-term population study in Western Australia's central wheat belt.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the rival for this spider was a 28-year-old Mexican tarantula that obviously passed away 15 years earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they were just studying the behavior and population dynamics of trapdoor spiders.
I honestly didn't know they could live this long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, male, let's see. The research shown that male trapdoor spiders leave their burrow at maturity around 7 to 9 years old to wander in search of a mate, after which he dies.
Mm-hmm.
So the female stays put, raising hatchlings inside the protection of her burrow, which she temporarily seals with a mud plug. And so I guess that was largely what this spider was doing, just hanging out in her burrow.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, next up, We got another story out of Japan. So, Aibos. Everybody remembers Aibos, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The cute little robot dog from Sony.
Yeah. They were pretty successful for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I learned what Aibo stood for in this article.
Which?
Artificial Intelligent Robot.
Yep. Well, as everybody knows, of course, they stopped manufacturing them.
Yeah.
And so all the Aibos are starting to die off. And so in Japan, there's a bunch of... there's some Buddhist organizations decided to give the Aibos an actual complete Buddhist funeral.
Yep,
for scrapping them.
Yep. Yeah, so... this involves a company named Aifun.
Mm-hmm.
That is particularly... sort of the main company that is helping to repair these Aibos for people.
Mm-hmm.
Being that they stopped manufacturing them in 2006, the supplies for the parts and such has run dry. And so how do you repair these things? You use the remains of dead Other ones Aibos. That are not going... Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the... the company, before they, officially start scrapping them, has a, the head priest at Kofukuji, one of the most, well-known, temples in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They do a little bit of ceremony. There's a nice picture of, them doing this.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a nice little thing they do.
Yeah, this does not surprise me in the least.
Yeah.
Nope.
Coming from Japan is one thing, but, you know, it's like one of my Japanese friends had one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And it had become kind of part of his family.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it finally did go out, it was like a real loss for them.
Yeah, it was like losing an actual pet.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Aifun CEO... says here, we'd like to return the souls to the owners and make the robot a machine to utilize their parts. We don't take parts before we hold a funeral for them. The head priest at Kofukuji says of the Aibos, all things have a bit of soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they also quoted the Sony site for Aibos, which says, happiness is spending quality time with you. Being with people is what Aibo loves best. With its irrepressible... curiosity, Aibo wants to know you, explore its environment, understand the ways of the world, and from time to time, be a little mischievous.
Yeah. And didn't they actually say they were going to bring that line back at some point?
Yeah, they're making all new Aibos.
Yeah. So, yay.
Yeah. Yeah, with the new wave of sort of AI stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cloud connected.
That makes great sense. A great idea for this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so. Now we get cloud-connected Aibos that are becoming part of people's families and learning and becoming more familiar with that particular family and their habits, and that's all being stored in the cloud, and then that one dies, and then it gets re-downloaded into another one. That's a really existential shit going on here now.
And then we get Skynet.
Yeah. So, okay.
All right.
Skynet is Aibo. There we go.
Yeah.
We figured it out.
All right. Well, another Australia story. We're hopping all the way back to Australia again. Hmm. For those of you who don't know, the Great Barrier Reef is, it's not in good shape right now.
No.
Good over a quarter of it is dead.
Yep.
At this point. And it's deteriorating at a more rapid pace than they originally thought. So the Australian government is pledging $500 million to help combat it. And there are things they can do, but, you know, the Great Barrier Reef is an organic thing, and it will eventually die. So what they have to do is find ways to help replace it.
Yeah. There's kind of like a glass half full, glass half empty kind of way you can think about the Great Barrier Reef, which is, you know, one way is that it's dying, the mm-hmm. other way is that it's changing to something else.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this $500 million that the Australian government is putting into the Great Barrier Reef is trying to find a way to, restore what they can, as well as fix some of the problems that mm-hmm. have been going on. Things like the Crown of Thorns starfish that have been plaguing it.
Yeah.
Of this $500 million, $444 million of it is going to their partnership with the Great Barrier Reef Foundation, and $56 million for the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority and mm-hmm. the Department of the Environment and Energy. So they're going to improve their monitoring of the reef's health and measurement of its impacts to try to just learn more about it and sort of see what ways they can do to try to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, break down what the $500 million is going for. $201 million to improving water quality with changed farming practices such as reduced fertilizer use. So yeah, they have a lot of runoff from farms and I assume probably a lot of tourism as well, especially with things like sun lotion coming off of you as you're swimming in the water. And that's sort of kind of oily, doesn't mix with the water. And that sort of stuff can be real bad for things like the Great Barrier Reef, as well as just wildlife around there. $100 million is going towards reef restoration and funding science that supports reef resilience and adaptation. $58 million fights against the coral-eating crown of thorns starfish.
Mm-hmm.
$45 million for community engagement, such as indigenous traditional knowledge for sea country management, $40 million for enhancing reef health monitoring and reporting, and the $56 million is going to the Marine Park Authority and Department of Environment and Energy
mm-hmm.
to expand all of their operations as related to the Great Barrier Reef.
Contrast that to the EPA, which seems to be intent on actually destroying the planet, so...
Yep.
Of that what you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as Trump says, we can leave a little bit of the environment, but we can't hurt the businesses.
Anyways.
So, next up. So there's this high school in New Jersey that's been having this thing called the Poop Bandit. Whatever reason, there's a dude just taking a random dumps in places and then taking off.
What is it with people just running into random places and taking dumps? This is like, we've had this story before, but it was just this random woman.
Sometimes you gotta go.
Yeah, well, this one gets especially funny because they finally found out who the poop bandit was. It wasn't a student. It was the superintendent.
Oh, yep. God.
Yeah, so... this had been taking place over the course of several months. Let's see, quote here, I was assumed as some student playing a prank or something. As soon as I found out it was an adult man, I was really taken aback. I really think he needs to get some help.
Mm-hmm.
You think?
Yeah, so I guess this guy had been defecating near another school's track and football field on a daily basis.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so he was put on paid leave of absence as they investigate this further. Let's see, leaves can only be without pay if the person faces indictments or tenure charges, according to the state law. So I guess students at the school are not sure why the hell he would do this. They say there are portable toilets close by if you really need to use the bathroom that badly. Okay, yeah, so this is a superintendent of a different school district. That's the weird
thing. Seriously?
Yeah, because there's a quote here, if it was our superintendent, I'd be pretty embarrassed.
Yeah, but it was another one.
It's like a regular show with the two parks that are competing or something, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess he has been charged with lewdness, littering, and defecating in public.
Yeah, misdemeanors.
Yeah. So I guess their Kenilworth School's academic director will assume the role of superintendent for the time being. Which, there's actually a good comment here. It says the pooper intended.
Wonderful. Well,
how old do you think this guy is?
40s.
42.
Maybe he's really trying to find the joy in his job.
he's traveling to another school to shoot on their
he really football field. Dislikes the other team's football team. I got nothing.
Yeah.
New Jersey.
Yeah, well, next up, ESA have released this amazing, and we are not, that's underselling it, this amazing 3D map of the Milky Way galaxy.
Yep. Yeah, so ESA is not the Entertainment Software Association that we would probably be most familiar with.
Yeah.
It's the European Space Agency.
Yep.
They set up a spacecraft called the Gaia spacecraft. Yeah. It's a mapping satellite that's actually is on a interesting track just outside of the moon. It's called Lagrange 2. It's an orbit that is about 1 million miles away from Earth that essentially allows it to better see things in space.
Yeah.
Whereas compared to the Hubble that we have, which is sort of in space, in Earth orbit. Occasionally, the Earth or the Moon gets in the way. So yeah, they have had this thing out there for a while, and yeah, launched in 2013, and sort of have used the data. So I guess as it rotates in space, it measures about 100,000 stars each minute. Covers the whole sky in about 2 months. Each star is measured about 70 times on average. And so, yeah, we have a number of videos here sort of showing this off. They also have a really cool YouTube 360-degree video that I need to load up on my YouTube app on my PS4 in PSVR.
Yeah.
Sort of check out. So pretty cool to see. They show... I think on the ESA site, show a kid with like a mobile VR thing on his head, looking around in it.
Yeah, you can do it in Daydream or.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a really cool thing to see, sort of mapping out the night sky, as far as what we could see, and yeah, it's really cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well. Next up, and we've now gotten into the entertainment portion of the show, DC has revealed their new streaming service for the DC Universe.
Yep, it's called DC Universe.
Everybody wonders why.
So yeah, they're going to have a bunch of animated and live-action series in this. Really announced too many details here about specifics. But they did announce a couple of original shows that are going to be a part of this service. They're doing an animated Young Justice Outsiders. There's a live-action adaptation of The Titans. And an animated series focusing on Harley Quinn.
Okay, that last one sounds pretty good.
Yep. And they also announced a live-action Swamp Thing series.
Okay, that could actually be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, if this story had come out like last year at around this time, when the DC Universe was just basically a complete clusterfuck, I probably would have said this makes no goddamn sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But seeing as they've got somebody at the head of their brand now and is actually looking to make it not suck, there's definite potential here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. We know the Swamp Thing show will be written by Mark Verheiden, who worked on Daredevil and Ash vs. Evil Dead, and Gary Dauberman, who did It, the recent one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Let's see. The Titans show is being written and produced by Greg Berlanti, who did Arrow and The Flash shows for DC, which At least the Flash is really good.
Yeah. I wonder if those shows would end up on there as well somehow.
Maybe.
They don't mention it in the article, but
yeah.
It makes a lot of sense if they would.
Yeah, I don't think DC has really announced much of anything. They don't even have a date for this. Like the landing page for this just has like, oh, the logo for Titans and Swamp Thing and Young Justice and Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
It's like, give us your email address. We'll tell you when we got more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. We know the Titans show is supposed to launch in 2018 sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And Swamp Thing is next year, 2019. Mm-hmm. So it's probably sometime later this year.
Mm-hmm.
I assume probably when Titans is ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have like no pricing, no idea what sort of backlog it's going to offer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. So I specifically am looking forward to the Harley Quinn one, mostly because I want to see how they're going to deal with her relationship, not with just with Joker, but also with Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, Poison Ivy is the healthiest relationship she has.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. The Harley Quinn series is headed by Justin Halpern, Patrick Schumacher, and Dean Laurie, who previously collaborated on DC's superhero comedy Powerless, which I don't really know much about.
No, I don't either.
It's loosely inspired by the current comics.
Oh, well, in that case, that actually is not a bad idea. Yeah,
where the character has cut ties with the Joker and is roughing it in Gotham City alongside her bestie Poison Ivy.
Yeah, they're more than besties.
Yeah.
Besties isn't covering it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they're hoping to bring in Margot Robbie to voice her.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
So let's see, what else? This week, The Simpsons officially became the longest-running scripted show in television history. Previously, the record had been held by Gunsmoke, and that record was broken this week.
Yep, they hit 636 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a hell of a lot.
Yeah. And that was hard to do because Gunsmoke was around for a long fucking time.
Well, Gunsmoke did it in 20 years.
Yeah.
Simpsons is on its 29th.
Yeah.
And they've largely stayed at the same amount of episodes every year.
Yeah.
Mm. At 22.
Hmm.
Animated, by the way. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, though. Arguably, that's a lot easier now that it can be done on the computer.
Yeah.
Versus hand animation. But yeah, they've been confirmed for a 30th season. I don't know how much longer they go after that.
Yeah, they go as long as they can keep making it funny, I guess.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that's kind of weird. They've essentially stopped putting that stuff on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah.
They were doing that for a long time. Now it's like, whatever. Fuck.
Yeah, just buy it digitally. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I just had my first 10 seasons on DVD, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. So, next up.
I guess part of that is they're maybe thinking about doing a movie.
Another one?
Yeah.
All right.
Talking about how they need the right script before they even think about doing it, but
yeah,
they're at least considering doing it.
Mm.
The first one was pretty good.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah. All right. So next up, Arrested Development. Those who don't know, Arrested Development, they redid their fourth season, or at least remixed it. It's on Netflix now.
Yep. That finally released. So like the original season 4 formatted things quite a bit differently than the previous seasons, where that was more of an ensemble thing, where here it was kind of like, oh, this episode is about, you know, Buster.
Mm-hmm.
This is his thing. And the thing I really liked about that is it started to layer things a bit more, because you learn like, oh, this is what Michael was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, here was Job, and then his storyline sort of weaves into Michael's story, and then by the end, you fully understand what all has gone on.
Mm.
It's a really nice way of layering all this stuff, especially just being able to better capitalize on some of the quirks of these different characters, and just having a lot of fun with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely did not get like universal acclaim out of it. There are some people that just did not like it. So Mitch Hurwicz spent a long time. So going back and recutting everything to be more traditional styled, essentially calling it, what is it? They put out a big note on the Arrested Development Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, Remix of Season 4. Not sure if they gave it a... Yeah, Arrested Development Season 4 Remix Fatal Consequence.
Mm.
And it released today, obviously, May 4th. If you know your Arrested Development, that is Cinco de Cuatro.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they call it. Yeah. Because they're dumb white people.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they think, oh, Cinco de Miles, Cinco de Cuatro.
They're not just dumb white people, they're dumb rich white people. Or,
yeah. Well, attempting to.
Were rich.
Yeah. Some would think that maybe they're parroting the Trumps.
They're more parroting the sort of waspy.
Yeah. But they're parroting that style of family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, along with that, he said season 5 is actually right around the corner. Let me see the quote here. Let's see, the first is that a new fifth season of Arrested Development will be coming back like soon, like real soon. Like, if you knew when, you would not be wrong to be thinking, why are we all just hearing this now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to be offensive, but I know why everyone's suddenly mad at me. And yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if they managed to get everybody together again, because that was, yeah. I think, one of the problems with Season 4, is that they didn't shoot them with everybody together.
Yeah, they've got everybody back in.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, remember how Season 4 was shot? It was like the scenes, the green screening and the fact that they were in two different places was very obvious at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's not a problem this time. So.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Penultimate story of the night. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt will end after its upcoming fourth season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're going to sort of wrap things up here.
Mm-hmm.
The first half is out on May 30th. It kind of got split into two parts because Tina Fey was working on her Broadway musical for Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And they kind of let her delay the second half so she could work on that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which I guess got nominated for Tony, so it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are 6 episodes, I guess, coming out on May 30th.
Yep, and that's going to be it.
Well, that'll be the first half. Then we'll get the second half later in the year.
Hmm.
And I guess this will also be time to make it Emmy eligible.
Yeah.
But there's also, they kind of hint that there might also be a movie. To sort of further wrap things up, but no real confirmations. It's literally just an ongoing conversation that they might work on that as well. But yeah, the show's been really good. I look forward to them being able to just wrap it up and not keep it going
indefinitely. Yeah.
Like, in sort of the way that House of Cards kind of went on long enough for the main... for Kevin Spacey to get torn down by the Me Too stuff.
Yeah.
To where now they're having to, like, kind of reboot it for the final season, which is a weird thing.
Yeah. It's especially going to, because, like, the way the storyline is supposed to end is that he's supposed to be, the way it was originally supposed to be is that he gets assassinated near the end of it.
Yeah.
That's sort of, because, I mean, that's how the original House of Cards went to begin with.
Yeah.
Be like, whoops, he got assassinated. We can't show you that.
Nope.
Yeah, let's tell you something about something else. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Do that for 13 episodes.
Yeah. But And finally, last story of the night. For those of you who don't know, Russell Crowe had his big auction.
Yep.
You know, and for his divorce. And so he sold all of his shit, a lot of shit, including his jock strap. Well, John Oliver bought a lot of it, and he did probably one of the coolest things possible, which is he took what he bought and he sent it to one of the last remaining Blockbusters in the United States in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yep. Yeah, so obviously Blockbuster got shut down a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
yeah. but there were a few that were franchise-owned.
Yep.
By individual people mm-hmm. that still went on. And yeah. I think a couple of them are in Alaska.
Yep.
So yeah, John Oliver had this big segment, initially teasing that they didn't buy anything, but then revealing the obvious thing that they did. They bought the jock strap. They bought one of his outfits. They bought like the director's chairs from one of his movies. He also managed to sneak out the Denzel Washington chair, which sold for more than his chair. yeah, it's a good segment on John Oliver. And so, yeah, they basically put out that segment to say, hey, we would like to send this to you guys, so we need you to contact us and tell us you actually want this. If not, we're going to send this to the... I forget what the, it's a city in Pennsylvania. They sent the giant. They tried to send the giant train, like train station. They made because mm-hmm. they got into a weird segment where they were following this local station in Pennsylvania that had like a backyard segment where they would do like news bits there, mm-hmm. and it would have like this little train thing in the back that would just go round and round. Mm-hmm. But on some days it would. Fall off of there or just stop working or whatever, and people just go fucking nuts about it. They had like call-in segments where people call in like, you know, what's going on with the train? Why is it not running today? You guys need to get somebody that cares about the train to make sure it's running.
Yeah.
And, then so they made this really ridiculous train set that was probably like 8 feet tall. It had a bunch of like landmarks from the town, and I think they made modifications to it to put John Oliver's face on the tunnel, so the train was driving through his mouth, things like that. And so yeah, they put out this notice to the Anchorage Blockbuster, not actually contacting them directly or anything, but obviously the internet and
they
people that
sure
just
found out about
nearby found out about it. So along with the jockstrap, they also gifted a vest Crowe wore in Les Miserables. That was 2012, a robe and boxing shorts from Cinderella Man, a hood from Robin Hood. And both Crowe and Denzel Washington set chairs from 2007's Oscar-nominated American Gangster. But yeah, the jockstrap is the most talked about thing, which came from Cinderella Man. Yeah, he says, the guy who runs that Blockbuster, we have all this memorabilia, and the only thing people care about is the leather jockstrap. yeah. Yeah, that jockstrap cost them $7,000. I said, I did not know this was going to happen. I had no idea. He initially didn't see the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Same evening it aired, he checked their Facebook page.
Yeah.
And saw it receive 51 direct messages. He says, I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
He watched it later on. Shop was given 48 hours to contact them to claim it. It was crazy. He said of his attempts to make contact with the show's producers, you wouldn't believe how many phone calls I got from people trying to help us get a hold of these guys.
I can believe.
Yeah, eventually, a man from Wisconsin said his cousin worked at HBO. And gave him a number for the front office. Even then, he didn't really think the memorabilia would wind up at his store. I figured we'd get pictures or something like that. When asked by a reporter if he was planning to have a jockstrap grand opening, he laughed. I never thought of that. It was displayed near the front of the store. As soon as you walk in, you'll see it. And no, you can't try it on. People call up and they say, If we gave you $20, can I get a picture of myself in the jockstrap?
Yeah, no.
But yeah, this is sort of a thing that John Oliver wanted to do because, you know, these are dying breeds, the blockbusters. And obviously they're probably not doing huge business.
No.
And so he offered this up as a way to give them a means of drumming up more business.
Yeah.
Though I guess now it's probably just going to be more people wanting to see this shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is the blockbuster I heard about.
Yeah.
Come for the jockstrap, leave with the DVD.
Yeah. All right, well. All right, so I do believe we got a show, folks. Yes, we do. If you would like to write into the show, have something you want us to read on the air, question, comment, any of that stuff, you can write into us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link to it in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can also find our little bit of stream of consciousness shenanery. It's made up a new word, shenanery. You can find it at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, any places where unscripted flummery like ours can be consumed by your ear mouths for your pleasure. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. This has been Let's Weekend, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. Good night.